Meet Deepak. The character is fictional. The experience is shared by people across London today. This is their story. In Ealing Southall, among the most deprived constituencies in England, the NHS struggles to fill nursing vacancies while would-be nurses cannot access training places. The workforce pipeline has been severed not by lack of candidates or facilities, but by Treasury spending limits that treat healthcare investment as a burden rather than the pathway to staffed wards and patient care.
My name is Deepak, and I have wanted to be a nurse since I was 16. My grandmother spent her last 3 months at Ealing Hospital, and I watched the nurses there work with a combination of technical skill and human kindness that I knew I wanted to learn. She would squeeze my hand and say the nurses made her feel safe, even when she was frightened. I grew up in Southall, helping my parents run their corner shop on the Broadway. And I always thought nursing would be my way of giving something back to the community that raised me. I did well in my A-levels at Villiers High School and applied to study nursing at the University of West London. The campus was walking distance from home, and I could see myself cycling there each morning, learning in the simulation labs, then working shifts at Ealing Hospital where my grandmother had been cared for. It felt like the pieces of my life were falling into place. In 2019, I applied for a nursing training place with West London NHS Trust. I passed the interview, completed all the assessments, and received a conditional offer. 2 weeks before the course was due to start, I got a phone call from the admissions office. The woman on the other end sounded apologetic, but matter of fact. "I'm afraid we've had to reduce the cohort size this year. We were planning to take 40 students, but we can only accommodate 15. Health Education England has imposed budget constraints, and we simply don't have the funding to train the full cohort." I was disappointed, but it sounded reasonable. Budgets are tight, resources are limited. These things happen. She suggested I reapply the following year when the situation might improve. In 2020, I applied to Imperial College Healthcare NHS Trust. Same process. Application, interview, assessments. This time I felt more confident, more prepared. I passed everything and was told I would hear back within 2 weeks. The call came on a Thursday afternoon. "We're very impressed with your application," the recruitment coordinator said, "but I'm afraid we've had to suspend our nursing training program temporarily. We're waiting for the outcome of the Treasury spending review, and until we know what our allocated budget will be, we cannot commit to starting new cohorts." Again, it sounded logical. The Treasury was reviewing spending across all departments. These were uncertain times. I told myself to be patient. In 2021, I tried Hillingdon Hospital NHS Foundation Trust. By now, I had been working full-time at my parents' shop for 2 years, watching my dream recede with each failed application. The recruitment manager at Hillingdon was kind but blunt. "We would love to take you on. We have 30 nursing vacancies right now, and we desperately need qualified staff. But NHS England has given us insufficient allocated training budgets. I can show you the spreadsheet if you want. The money simply isn't there. There is no funding." That was the phrase I kept hearing from different people in different hospitals, all saying the same thing. There is no funding for the training places. There is no funding for the cohorts. There is no funding to connect the people who want to learn with the wards that need them. I accepted this explanation for months. It made sense in the way that household budgets make sense. If you don't have the money, you can't spend it. But then, 6 months after the rejection from Hillingdon, I was walking past the University of West London campus, where I had originally hoped to study. It was a Tuesday afternoon, what should have been peak training time, and I decided to walk through the building. The nursing simulation labs were completely empty. Brand new equipment sat under dust sheets. Patient simulators that cost thousands of pounds each. Monitoring devices still in their packaging. IV training arms that had never been used. I could see through the glass doors of the lecture theatres, rows of empty chairs facing blank whiteboards. I asked the facilities manager, who was locking up one of the rooms, how many students they were training. "We've got space for 200, he said, "but we're only running programs for about 60 right now. Funding restrictions, you know how it is. These labs could be busy from morning till night, but we just can't get the budgets approved. That was the moment something shifted in my understanding. I was standing in a building designed to train nurses, filled with equipment designed to teach nursing skills, in a neighborhood where hospitals had nursing vacancies. Looking at empty rooms because someone somewhere had decided there was no money to fill them. But what exactly was it that there was no money for? The building existed. The equipment existed. The people who wanted to learn existed. The hospitals that needed staff existed. The lecturers who could teach existed. Every physical component of nurse training was sitting right there, unused, while I and dozens of others like me were told we couldn't access it because of budget constraints. I started to understand that the government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would connect all these existing pieces. They hadn't run out of pounds, any more than a football referee runs out of points to award. They had decided not to award them. The phrase, "there is no funding," began to sound different to my ears. It wasn't a description of a natural shortage, like water in a drought. It was a decision someone had made, dressed up in the language of inevitability. The Treasury, which oversees the government that creates every pound note and mints every coin, had chosen to tell the NHS it couldn't have enough of them to train the nurses the country needed. Where I am now, 3 years after I first tried to become a nurse, I understand that my story is not about bad luck or natural scarcity. It is about political choices made by people who could have chosen differently. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I know now that mine is not just one person's story of disappointment. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. It was locked.
What Deepak experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique works by citing economists or commentators who treat government budgets exactly like household budgets, as though repeating this false analogy makes it true. In the tobacco industry, companies funded scientists who would publicly question the link between smoking and cancer, not because the science was uncertain, but because a lab coat and credentials could make doubt sound authoritative. The manufactured expertise gave cover for profitable delay. In Deepak's case, every rejection letter cited unnamed budget authorities and spending review experts who treated NHS funding as a limited household pot. When he questioned why training places sat empty while hospitals had vacancies, he was told that economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. In Deepak's constituency, those resources were sitting idle in empty training labs while hospitals struggled with understaffing. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Ealing Southall ranks 96 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in the second most deprived decile. The constituency has 649 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Local organisations received £18.9 million in total grants according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.